This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing, and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of.
Gordon, good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Doug. And last week you had your face mask on. You got the full body suit today. You should be all right. Your voice is sounding good. Your eyes are clear. Your nose isn't running.
I'm back, so. Recovered from my quick trip to the States. It's always tough on the body, but always good to be back here. And today, again, another interesting guest, Gordon, Pepe Maree.
Yeah, it's great to see Pepe again. Yeah. I mean, I had the pleasure of working with him for a while. A bit worried about his new conservative image. He used to have those dodgy shoes that you wore for a while. Is that with the curly toes, those clown shoes? Are that gone, Pepe?
You know what they say about brands, eh? We have to evolve. So that was a very good campaign that took me in good stead for the first 20 years. And now I'm on the second 20 years of my path.
So if you don't know, in the unlikely event that you don't know who Pepe is the co-founder and head of creative at Joe Public, one of the independent creative houses, and we'll chat a little bit about that. Pepe, from our side, thanks. I know we're all busy, and thanks for making the time. It's really nice to see you again.
Awesome, and thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
So, Doug.
Pepe, I think let's just jump into it. And I think one of the things people who follow you, people who look at the work you're doing, besides the creative and some of the great work coming out of Joe Public, you talk a lot about purpose in your work, purpose in creativity, in advertising. Now, I guess some people would say, why don't you just get on and make some ads, you know, and stop with this purpose stuff? But I want to know, and I'm very interested in purpose. I want to know, what do you mean by purpose? What is your purpose? And how's that influenced your thinking and the work at Joe Public?
So I'm going to give you a long version. You take what you think is appropriate. So it started with a personal journey. So I'm also learning now that you know, there's explicit learning, like book learning, and then there's tacit learning, like more sort of intuitive, that you learn through experience. Mm. So my journey with purpose started with me, firstly, our business going bankrupt, my relationship falling apart with my wife, discovering that my so-called good deed of donating money to AIDS orphanage was linked more to my ego wanting to make music and being more about me than serving other people, not making money at all out of advertising when I had huge ambitions to make money out of the business. So it's a huge midlife trauma, and actually discovering through that, and I call it traumatic because it was really, I hit the brick wall in 2006. And the business went pretty much under, and I went on a search and I discovered life purpose. So before I came to business purpose, I discovered life purpose, and I was interested by it because I've always been strategic as a creative person, and I'm also a business person, I'm an entrepreneur, and I actually it resonated with me because it seemed like a more profound strategy. So at that stage, if you ask me, why do I exist, I wouldn't have a clue. Mm. If you ask me, what's my five-year plan, let alone my 10 or 25-year plan, I would have said, I'm living for the weekend, rock and roll.
Yeah.
So it was a deep personal learning. I applied it to my life, and my life spectacularly changed because I'm an applicator. So when I find new knowledge, I apply. I don't have intention. Mm. I mean, intention's kind of one thing, but 90% is actually action.
Mm.
So I acted on the knowledge, changed my life profoundly, and I just ask myself the question, you know, if I'm a human being, can a business be a business being?
Mm.
Does it have a greater purpose than its name given to it by its founders, Joe Public, Joe for short? And does it have a greater purpose beyond A, making money? Because business textbooks now, I'm doing an MBA at the moment, they teach you, and I define it in every one of my assignments, that businesses exist to make money for shareholders.
Mm.
I know for a fact that is not correct, and that's probably one of the key reasons why, bigger than the coronavirus at the moment, the challenge the world's facing is businesses are failing.
Mm.
And economically, that's a huge disaster we're facing. Mm. And brought that thinking into our business in 2009, and it spectacularly changed the trajectory of the business. So that's just a bit of a broader where it comes from.
Mm.
We can get into what exactly it means,
mm.
bringing it into the business, and then taking the business forward based on purpose rather than making money.
And that's lived today by your people, Pepe?
No. This is the interesting thing. You know, life is all about application. So the writing could be on the wall.
Mm.
I always related to smoking kills on my box of smokes when I used to smoke for 18 years of my life.
Mm.
And when I drink that potted like we used to, and some people still do, but I would smoke like 60 cigarettes.
Yeah.
And every on a good night, I'll have a couple of bottles of wine and smoke literally like three boxes of 20.
Yeah.
Stuyvesant.
Yeah.
And it would say smoking kills. So that's the knowledge.
Yeah.
But the knowledge is not powerful until I apply the knowledge.
Yeah.
So to me, it's all about application. I would say in our business, probably 35% of our people, because we measure it, so actually factually, 38% is the data, are striving to live the purpose every day because application is so difficult for people as it is for brands.
Yeah. And I guess the difficulty, sorry, Gordon, just
thing. I'm fascinated.
I guess the difficulty, I suppose, in such a client-centric business as yours is that perhaps some of the clients you work with are money-driven. In other words, their purpose, much like you were saying in the textbooks, are to make money, to survive, to meet the next quarter's numbers, whatever the case may be. So I suppose there's that difficulty between, say, your people who want to live a purpose, working with a client who perhaps, in your view, isn't necessarily purpose-driven, but more so bottom-line-driven, etc.
100%.
Yeah.
And it makes it tricky, but I think it's not new knowledge.
Mm.
You know, this debate on brands with purpose, been around since 2011. It's already a decade.
Yeah.
But I don't think people are completely clear what it means.
Mm.
And also, once I don't think they're clear on how to really find it.
Mm.
I've done my 10,000 hours. I'm working towards a PhD. I think you've got yours.
Yeah, I have, yeah.
I'm working towards mine on this as a subject, as a key subject, to put data behind it.
Okay. Purpose in business, you mean?
I'm still in two minds what my paper is going to be on, whether it's on purpose in business or bringing purpose into education.
Okay.
Because the sooner you catch the human being with his thinking and introduce it into their mindset, the better. Because once, what I find is when you post 30s, you don't want to change.
Yeah.
And sometimes your life's actually pretty good. You know, you've got a good income, you've got a good job, it's good enough, but you don't realize it can be spectacular.
Yeah.
On all levels.
Yeah.
Including financial.
But I think you know, you talk about age, Gordon, and sometimes
why are you looking at me when you talk about
no.
We should look at each other.
If there was a mirror, I'd be looking past you at the mirror. I'm looking at you to hope you're going to contribute to my point. And that is that sometimes, you know, there's that adage, learn, unlearn, relearn. We've all seen it become cliched. But I think as you get older, you get stuck. Mm. And you say, but do I really have to? You know, is it really for me? And I think that's a bold thing, you know. So certainly, and not just purpose in business, but, you know, change as a notion is not an, always an easy thing to do, but sometimes a necessary thing on one's path.
Yeah, but look, that's really something which, you know, is intriguing for me. So we talked about, I know you have always, you describe yourself as a purpose advocate. Mm-hmm. And one of the earlier discussions we had with Marte Akabe from ACA was, in the modern context, you know, what is the purpose of an advertising agency? Now, you've also introduced change. And one of the things which intrigues me is how on earth I've lived long enough in advertising to be in a world where the top agency in the world is an auditing group called Accenture. And when they figured out they didn't have enough understanding of the true purpose of an ad agency, they just bought Jogger 5. So, I mean, have we changed at all? What is the purpose of an ad agency in 2020 as opposed to 1970 odd when I joined one? What's shifted? What's the change? What's the purpose?
So, you see, tricky question. It's got two layers to it. So often in branding, in any business, you will relate the purpose of the business to your product or your service. So you go, if I've got a product like, let's say, like a Coca-Cola, then my purpose is to supply my drinks to my consumer as a first base. So as an ad agency, on a top line level, I would say the purpose of the industry is to create a product that assists our clients to sell their products. That's what it should be. And if you look at what the end consumer consumes, it is actually that creative product. And I'm also now conscious, I'm sitting here speaking with a creative lens as a creative leader. But I'm also a business leader. You know, if I look at Steve Jobs as a CEO, he was not finance obsessed. He was product obsessed. He was more product obsessed than his designers. I mean, if you listen to all of his content, that was what he obsessed about as the CEO, as the business person. I think what's happened was, and it is a global thing, but even on a local level, globalization, global companies buy local companies, the mandate for the business leaders become to deliver financial results overseas, and that becomes the purpose of that business, to make money for its overseas shareholder. Where in essence, the purpose of that business should be to supply a product to its clients that's going to assist that client to grow. Now, of course, that product has got linked to its strategic thinking, creative thinking, a level of service, but that's where the focus should be. I'm actually sometimes, not dumbfounded, it's a bit hectic, but I suppose I'm surprised that something so simple can be so can become so complicated, like a restaurant. You go there for the food and the service in that order, not for the service and the food. You go for the food and the service, and third, maybe the ambiance. That's what an ad agency is about. And I think we started selling like, I mean, I'm not a non-believer in the importance of data, but data is secondary to what we should be selling, which is ideas, thinking. We should be selling our thinking. And it's interesting. So we all eat it up, and yes. So now it's interesting that the whole globe, it's all becoming now about numbers and data and all this talk. But I mean, if I see what's going on in the social space, we can factually spend 300,000-400,000 rand in time behind a tweet. And if you're on Twitter, you know how much that thing lives for, like 1 second. And you might have 10 million followers, but 5 will see it. So are we in an interesting space? But if you ask me what happened, I think it's been a, we've forgotten what this industry is about.
And this industry traditionally has been about, as you say, the thinking about the idea. And whether you express that idea now on Twitter or on YouTube or on conventional TV, the fundamental principle remains the same. But we're also living in a world where political correctness seems to completely obviate making any provocative statement at all. I guess there's a newer phrase than push the envelope, but you were always trying to push the envelope. You were challenging me as a consumer. Now with regulation, I mean, is it possible? How do you balance political correctness with provocative creativity?
Well, I think, what is it called now?
ARB.
ARB, the old. Yeah. So we had a very big run-in with the ARB. Now, of course, I understand that we need to self-regulate. The last thing you want is for government to regulate the industry. I'm very interested we're not regulating to that level just news. I mean, the trauma that just general news must cause, but once a brand's attached to it, you want to regulate it. And we had a severe run-in with them early on last year. We lost that case, which again makes me question the level of thinking. In terms of critical thinking that goes into that process, because how can you allow one consumer? We actually went and researched and spent a couple of hundred thousand rand on data to collect what was people's real views outside of the social space, and 96% of people were not offended by this piece of work at all, and the 4% that had a bit of a problem to it, they only had a problem with it because it became newsworthy. So they wouldn't have had if it didn't escalate. And still, they ruled based on one person's emotion against this piece of work,
yeah,
which economically could have been a disaster in a country where we should be employing people. So it's that, but we pushed back hard there, and I think they will think twice before they just go and ruling.
Yeah, we're going to have Gail in, I think, in a week or two to pick up on the discussion. But it becomes a challenge, you know, what offends one amuses another. So, Buffelsfontein, Bartwoli.
Yeah.
You know, bedarf yourself, your rover blixen. Yeah. I mean, I don't necessarily enjoy being portrayed as a pot-bellied, brying, beer-swilling idiot. But actually, you know, you take it on the chin because it's very, very funny, and it's a stereotype, but it's an amusing stereotype. I mean, if we applied that kind of ARB ruling to stand-up comedy, I mean, you wouldn't be allowed. No stand-up comic would be allowed on stage. So where do you draw the line?
Well, any form of entertainment.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go and look at the Wolf of Wall Street, then that must be banned in South Africa viewer because they're throwing dwarfs around.
Yeah.
You know, so now you're going and you're doing something outrageous in that piece of content against a minimalized small category of people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And anyone can wake up on any day in a bad mood and then have a problem. So if you're going to make a joke about being called Steve, now that's another thing. Or if I'm going to be a skinny guy and someone says something about skinny people, I'm going to complain to skinny people. Like, so what do you do? So then let's just run what? Blank screens or... Mm-hmm. So it's a very contentious
issue. So
yeah,
we've got to shift the dynamic. So let's not go too far down that line, because it was obviously there's a legal implication in that as well. But I mean, one area where you've personally had a tremendous role to play in shifting perceptions has been Pendurangs. I mean, when you go back to the initial Pendurang Awards, it was Bilt and Burger, and it was Volksmond. You know, I mean, any attempt to play with that formula would have been a disaster. And yet it's just morphed into something really incredibly exciting. It's more culturally involving of everybody. How have you morphed it from what it was to what it is now? And what is it now?
So let me not claim too much of it, but I can say with confidence that I've had many meetings with a then Articafia board advocating the importance of transformation, and I think that is why we as a business may not be where we should be yet, but we are a hell of a long way from where we started when we set out. In fact, we started transforming our business before there was a scorecard, because we really believe that diversity and creativity goes hand in hand, and if you want to speak to diverse market, so this is what happens behind the scenes. But at the same time, there was a space in my mind for award show that is purely vernacular. And for Pendurang to open itself up and actually be a vernacular awards show where it's all languages excluding English was always just a very amazing opportunity, because the Luries is now an African and Middle Eastern award. It's not a proudly just South African award. Mm. So it was just an opportunity. Mm. And I think through those discussions, and definitely with new management that came in that's managing the show now, they've transformed that show in the last 2 years to a level that I'm super excited about, because it just feels like a truly South African award show. And maybe that bit of competition will push the Luries to, which they are doing. Funny enough, the Luries is also transforming faster, but not at the rate, because once you shut down English, I mean, instantly you've got a local VNAC award.
Yeah. And yet the excuse one might use for shutting down English kind of went out the window with the Cairns Awards this year with Travelodge, I think, incredibly powerful vernacular radio campaign, which was one of the most exciting things I think that's happened to radio in decades.
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
Doc, just to give you an idea of where this has come from, back in the day when we had the Rand Easter show, believe it or not, Deep Purple came to play in South Africa. Most people don't know that, okay? And the reason I remember that is because we tried to run an ad and a report. So we had the whole thing, it was an Afrikaans ad, but it featured the rock group Deep Purple. They wouldn't run the ad because I wouldn't translate Deep Purple. So, but that is the name of the rock group. So I'd rather turn the ad away. So that's where it was to where it is now, which I think is quite remarkable. Doc, I mean, a couple of points which in terms of your multifaceted kind of thing. I mean, you're the chairman of the One School at a Time project. How are you? You say, you know, you have to have a good wife. So you're doing pendurings, you're doing this, you're running a business, you're doing a doctorate. How do you balance all these things? Tell us a bit about One School at a Time as well.
So that, I suppose, the insight. So early on, we spoke about sort of the broader purpose of a business sector. But within that sector, because I've done so much work on this as a subject matter, every single business has got a very unique purpose beyond just its product and its service. Now, that I know for a fact. I've just come back from Mauritius. I run a workshop there as well. I do that. It's another little – it's not a side project, but it's more collecting ways of how to help businesses discover their deeper purpose. What I find is once you find your life's purpose – your energy actually increases as you develop. So my capacity is just daily increasing to do more as long as I focus on where my areas of importance lie. So right now I know my most important area is the growth of the product of our business, to daily improve our creative excellence, because that's the value add to our clients. And then second, that the strategic excellence, well, in fact, the strategic excellence actually drives the creative excellence. So those are hand in hand, and then the service excellence holds that together. Mm. But to drive that excellence within our business, critical, number one for me. My second thing I'm focusing on is to obtain my MBA. I'm in my second year now, and then hopefully get into my PhD, because that's towards my interest in education. And my third part is to continue, I've been doing it now for 12 years together with one person in our organization, Bronwyn, to continue our journey towards learning more about township schools and the state of education in our country, which is a disaster. It's a factual disaster. It should be exposed. I was at a presentation yesterday with the ex-head of Stats South Africa, and he showed the data, which I'm aware of, but he showed it in depth. Mm. It's a crisis. So that's a huge passion point. And of course, remaining a committed husband and father, because my son's only 11 years old, you know, so I can't compromise that. But those are my key areas of focus. And I focus on that. But I find that having purpose, it gives me that very high level of energy to drive these missions of mine in life.
Mm. And I mean, just linking in with that, Pepe, last year you brought out your first book, Growing Greatness. Tell us a little bit about it. Why should people go out and buy it? How's it done? I had the benefit of sitting through a presentation at the launch when you did it. So just for the sake of our listeners out there, tell us a little bit about that, about the process and why people should go out and get it.
So I was unbelievably insecure to write a book because I had no intention to write a book. I was asked. And then when I got myself, when I agreed, because there's potentially an opportunity to inspire younger people into entrepreneurship, which was part of why I jumped at it, because I thought, okay, I'm going to focus on younger people to get into their own business at a younger age. And then I decided I'm going to write this book, and if it can touch one person's life. So I didn't have any intention to make money or to sell a lot of books. I just thought if I can touch one person, and that took the pressure off me to write this book. As it turned out, it became a bestseller at exclusives. I'm in second print now. I get quite a bit of money coming into my account every month. But more profound for me is I get feedback. It's now launched in 2018 around October. So really a year and a half almost away. Every single day, excluding weekends because I'm not on social, but every single day I get messages from someone who read this book. And at the heart of the book is purpose. Life purpose and business purpose. So I was trying to use it as a tool to change our approach to life and to business. And so far it's gaining traction. So
Well, that's great. That's great news. And I mean, and I believe you're busy looking at a second book. I think you've started with a draft. How far are you, and what is, and if you can, I don't mean to talk out of school here, but if you can give us a snippet of what to expect in the second book.
Yeah. So so what I've also learned now is what we do in life, we have these ideas and they normally come from an unconscious space. So they come from a space we don't even understand. Then, and I see this in business and I see this in personal life. And then we assess these ideas with our brains, which are not the cleverest thing. And then we override it. So I know now for a fact our gray matter processes at 2,000 bits per second. Supercomputers at 10 billion bits per second. Our unconscious at 400 billion bits per second. So the processing power of our unconscious is literally 2 tons versus 1 gram. Of what's sitting between our ears. But we still follow what's sitting between our ears, not our hearts. But now I know this intuitively. So I had this idea to write a second book when I was literally man down last year because of the pressure of the first quarter. A massive, we had a big bump start last year. And then with the election and all the politics. And I was on... felt like deathbed, but it wasn't. And I had an idea. I thought, well, what differentiates us from success in all areas of life, not just financial success, but it includes financial success. So on all levels, what makes the difference? And I realized it's habits. It's our habits, and it's not good or bad habits. I call them in my book liberating and limiting habits. So I don't want to judge a habit. I don't want to suddenly say smoking's bad or drinking's bad, because actually, it's the bad that inspires the good. For example, I think this tenor of Jacob Zuma might have driven consciousness up as to what should be the correct behavior of government. And looking back, we might find that he played a very critical role. So was he good or bad? So I didn't want to make a judgment. So the book's about habits, and it's about me proposing what liberating habits you can use in life to exchange them with your limiting ones. And I'm just using as example 20 of my most limiting habits that I've exchanged through my journey with liberating habits and how they've changed my life.
Okay. And Pepe, when can we expect to see this on the bookshelf?
So it's launching. So I've signed another contract, so you can't get out of it.
So you got it right.
Yeah. So it's got a lucky little thing that I'm doing though, because the idea was I'm interviewing smokers.
Yeah.
And I'm timing their smoking speed.
Yeah.
And then I time the reading speed. Okay. And then I work out how long the length of a chapter must be while they smoke a cigarette. And then I question them, what's their most limiting habit. And none so far have answered smoking, which is exactly what I'm looking for. I'm looking for limiting habits like I talk ugly language to myself in my head. You know this thing, I'm such a fucking idiot. That's a limiting habit.
Sure.
Or procrastination is a limiting habit.
Yeah.
You know, swearing could be, in some instance, a limiting habit, depending. So I'm using all their habits, and then I'm writing, if there's similarities to mine, I'm using my life experience to unlock these. As a parallel. I'm writing each chapter for each of them. So I'm actually writing this book for 20 people.
Okay. All right.
And they're going to be in the book, and their smokes are going to be in the book, and hence, because it's about smoking, but it's not, it's launching on the 10th of the 10th of 2020. So I can't get out of the date
because
it's 10 and 10 is 20 and 20 habits. habits that break habits, and it's around this little social experiment I'm doing.
All right. So just
I mean, the big picture, we a week or two ago had Dr. Nick Ebel on here talking about, he'd come out after the World Cup in Germany to look at South Africa in 2010. How would we become a winning nation? You know, what could we learn from Germany to make ourselves a winning nation? So, I mean, can we extrapolate? What, you know, how do you find your purpose as a nation? Because we had a purpose, or we thought we had a purpose, which has now become very unfashionable. We thought that, you know, a rainbow nation was a purpose, and now it seems it isn't the purpose. Can we, are there macro learnings that we can apply as a nation?
Fascinating you asked this question, Gordon, and I'm waiting. I'm hoping that there's some destiny at play, and at some stage... So we're busy picking up some, for the first time in our trajectory, we're starting to land some significant government business. I'm hoping that that's going to give me an in, because I've no doubt. I'm not dogmatic as a person, but I'm resolute on this. You will never get me off this point in this lifetime. That everything starts with finding the one word that you stand for in life as a starting point. One word. How you unpack that word is different. So if your word was love, so Doug's word was, your word's also love, and my word's also love, the meaning of that love might differ. Your purpose might be to be the most loving husband, father that you can ever be in this lifetime. That could be your purpose. There's nothing wrong with it. But without knowing it, you would not know that that's your focus in life. Mine might just be to be the most loving school principal. And yours might but it starts with one word. And why it resonates with me when I discovered this insight, at that stage I could only think of three brands in the world that stands for one word. At that stage, if you ask people, Toyota, what it stands for, people will play back reliability, Volvo safety, and Woolworths quality. So from a communication point of view, I thought, geez, that's powerful, because how many brands define themselves so powerfully that you know externally that they stand for one word? There's 40,000 businesses listed across all the stock exchanges in the world. I can still only find three. So the opportunity is massive. So for me, oh, I'm so sorry, you're going to have to cut this. What was the question?
Because we're just trying to say, can we find our purpose? How do we find our purpose as a nation?
There we go. So, thank you. That's exactly the point. So because I absolutely believe that that's what's needed in our country. You know, because now we do the typical thing. We're chasing GDP, like we're chasing bottom line. But the bottom line is called the bottom line because it's at the bottom. It should be at the bottom of your list of priorities. It's a byproduct of a list of other focuses. I know that intuitively. I know it through experience. I know it through how our business work. The more we focus on our purpose, the more the money comes in. It's incredible. There's not one country in this world that has a greater purpose. Not one. There's such an opportunity for this country. So yes, give me half a chance with the executive team of this country. But then again, you have to question, you have to find something greater than the tenure of a president. It needs to be greater than. It needs to live for 100 to 300 years. It needs to be that like crystal. But you're completely right. There's such an opportunity to change this country if you find a greater purpose. And I always thought if you can do it collectively, you can use advertising to extrapolate it out of a collective process through people. You know, you can get millions of people to contribute to the process to make it significant. So it's not just a couple of bosses at the top.
Yeah, and I think that's something we've seen, Doug, in a number of the podcasts, that you know, a brand these days has got to be more than the product offering. It has to have a conscience. It has to have and it has to show how that conscience lives day to day in a functional level. Yeah. You've just got to actually engage, but it's hard to know where to engage if that purpose isn't clear. Doc?
Can I give you one?
Yeah, please.
Okay. If you want to use this, use it. Just a last little input on that, the beautiful book by Phil Knight, Shoe Dog. And I don't know how many people read that towards the end of the book, but he says, we all understand the function of blood in our bodies. If it doesn't flow, we die. But if you ask me, why do I exist? I don't say to make blood. So we all understand why that money is the lifeblood of business. We get that. Without the money flowing, the business will die. But I don't wake up every morning to make blood. And I think that's a very fundamental shift. And hopefully through our journey going forward, we can help businesses discover their greater purpose, base our advertising on greater purpose, and potentially bring purpose to our country.
Mm. What's the just to wrap on that point then, what's the easiest way for people to contact you to explore the purpose issue? I mean, it seems all your initiatives, entrepreneurial, social, all converge at this. So is it the purpose driven Pepe they should contact on Twitter? What's the easiest way to get hold of you?
So I'm on Twitter, Pepe at Pepe Marais, PepeMarais. And anyone who contact me there, I normally feed my email and my contact details when people reach out. I'm very active. I mentor a lot of entrepreneurs, and I'm very passionate about this.
Great. Thanks, Pepe. And I think from our side on the podcast, and Gordon and I have tried to do this every week, we talk to people about getting involved. You know, it's not about two or three of us in a studio talking to people. It's talking with people. You know, this is just a thought starter, a dialogue. And again, thank you so much for your time. I know we're all busy, but I mean, two people out there, please get involved. You know, Pepe's now given you an invite. Don't be that person who says, I wish I could have, I should have, but didn't, you know. And it's about a habit, you know, it's about breaking perhaps the habit of leaving it for tomorrow. Rather do it today. Get a hold of Pepe, get a hold of us, you know, and be part of the dialogue, because collectively we want to make the country, its brands, its companies, its people, a better one for everyone.
Couldn't agree more, Doc, honestly. And I think one of my concerns in recent years has been that so much of this dialogue has been taking place behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. You don't know what's going on because you can't get on the committee, and you can't get on the committee because you don't know what's going on. So I think with social media now, access to people like yourself, and please use the podcast. It was created for that reason. Let's have the dialogue. Let everyone be exposed to the discussion. Are there questions you would like us to raise, things you'd like us to cover? Please just flag us on any one of the platforms that you're on, and we'll pick it up. So, Pepe, thank you so much for coming, and I really found that fascinating. And, Doc, looking good in that all cover coronavirus suit of yours, but hopefully next time you can take it off.
All good. Gordon, thanks again for your time. Pepe, thanks for your time.
Very appreciated the opportunity, so thank you to you.
Thanks, and Gordon, I'll catch you and everyone else next week.
Indeed.
And so that was another episode of The Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mataz. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views, and certainly will respond, and hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc, and it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, @MzanziMedia, and I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on in the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo, and we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.